songs that they were singing. And which is really the whole point of what I want to talk about today, is that it's not about that we don't know him. I hope everyone has a relationship here this morning with Christ. And this is a way to know him more, just like that song was saying. To know you and to know you more. I hope that's every one of our goals here this morning, that we would know Christ more on a personal level, on a day-to-day walk with Christ, day in, day out. We'll hear more about that as we go along here. I liken them verses, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. And then it's like almost verse 25 brings it in a new way, makes it even more clear. Whoever will lose his life for my sake will find it. It doesn't sound like the world talking, does it? You lose your life for my sake, then you'll find it. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense in the world, but in Christ it makes absolute sense. Lose your life in him and you'll find it. You'll find where your purpose is. And we're going to talk about that this morning some more. First of all, growing up, I was thinking about this a little bit when I was preparing this. In ages about 17, I think was about somewhere in there, 16 to 17 to about 24, I did a lot of snowboarding. Spent a lot of time on the mountains in Minnesota. I guess you'd call them hills there compared to mountains out here. So, but we did have some decent snow slopes there. But spent a lot of time snowboarding. Josh can probably identify with some of this. Elmer usually could too. I think he did a lot of snowboarding too when he was younger. But anyway, spent a lot of time out there. And I really enjoyed it. Switched over from skiing to snowboarding. But there was one place I often went. It was our local spot there, there in northern Minnesota. And enjoyed it a lot. And as everyone knows, if you would just continually do the same thing, buzz down the hills over and over, you'd probably get bored with it after a while. It's kind of one of them sports that progresses, and you try to push the limits a little farther and a little farther. Jake, you can probably identify with that, can't you? So you start trying new things, and you do this and do that. Pretty soon you're getting more into the board parks, and you're doing more jumps and, you know, all these different things that they have to offer. And I really enjoyed it and pushed the limits a lot. Sometimes to some injuries, nothing too major, I wouldn't say, but occasionally there were some hurts and injuries and that kind of thing. Very few broken bones, I'm glad for that. However, at this one place where I went all the time, they often had, especially the last couple years I was there, they had a triple, I guess you would call it, along the one tree line that we had. It was kind of off to the one side of the board park. And I used to eye them jumps up and think, man, someday I'm going to be able to hit them things. And it was kind of a goal in the back of my mind. Someday I'm going to get to them things. And we finally got there over a lot of practice of working my way up on smaller ones, moving up, and trying to go bigger on the small ones. And finally moving into these triple jumps that were set up along the side. And they were huge. I mean, they were massive huge. And as I got into it, there were some days when you just felt like you weren't quite on the game for that day. You just shied away from them because you knew that it's too risky to go into it. When you aren't landing stuff right, it's kind of like golf, the way I hear. I don't play much golf, but there's some days your game is just off. And if that's the day that's going on when you're snowboarding that day, you probably don't want to go barreling into them things. You'll probably come out with some broken bones. It's just the way it is. But once I got into it and started doing it, first I tried the first one. And if you can picture with me, the first jump comes in, and it's your smallest of the three. You come into the first one. You're looking at a jump similar to this, and your landing cuts out from about here with a knuckle out here. So if you're not familiar with this, your knuckle is right here where it curls. And you want to land on the down slope. It takes all the momentum out of your dropping out of the air. You want to clear that knuckle and land on the down slope for a smooth transition. If you hit it right, you almost don't feel when you hit the ground. You're coming off, you're flying through the air probably somewhere in the areas of, 15 feet off of the first one. You hit that down slope. So the first one I practiced was that small one at first. And as you came down the ramp came down very quickly, very steep. And if you didn't want to hit that second one, you had to bail in a hurry. Like you had to get out fast, or else you're going to be right into the ramp that goes up the next one, and then it's a major drop off to come off the side of it. So if you don't land right, you better get out quick, or you're going to be going right up the other one. And so practice on that first one a bunch, felt like it was getting pretty confident. Then you move to the second one, and that knuckle moves out a little farther, and the jump gets a little bigger. You come off that one, and you go into the last one. And if you ask anybody on these, what's the speed you go in? Because that's very common when you're going into a jump. What's the speed? And the snow varies from day to day depending on what the weather is and how your board is waxed. What's the speed on it? A lot of times people will say, you know, speed check on the first one, maybe a slight speed check on the second one. Third one, you're probably going to have to point it. That means don't speed check, go all the way in. And that third one, by the time we got to the point of being able to hit the first one, the second one, and you're into the third one, my whole point is when you go into that third one, you better be all in or you're in big trouble. If you start up that ramp and you decide today's not the day, you're not in good, you can try to come to a stop, but you're probably going to crash over that edge or you're going to go off the side. And it's all cut out of ice, so it's very, very hard. But my point is, and this is what we're going to talk about today, when you go into that third one, you had to be all in, full commitment, and no brake checking or nothing, because that gap between the knuckle and where the end of the thing is probably somewhere in the areas of 60 feet, somewhere in that area. And if you don't, that is just to get over the knuckle, and if you don't make that knuckle, and on the smaller, I'm not sure I ever did it on the bigger one, but I know on the smaller ones, if you hit that knuckle, which I did a time or two, you very easily can hit your ears, hit your knees, you compress completely. It's very painful. But anyway, you snowboarders know what I'm talking about. It can be a bad situation in a hurry. On that third one, you absolutely don't want to hit that knuckle because you're in big trouble if you do. But my point is, when you head into that, you had to be all in. If you're not all in, you're in trouble. And you guys have probably heard me say here in the last while about being all in, and that is our subject for today. What is it like in the Christian walk to be all in? You've heard me say it different times, and sometimes you just assume everybody knows what you're talking about. Today we're going to pick it apart a little bit more, but I need your input on it too, so there's going to be a lot of questions. And Douglas, you're back in here. Actually, I think he got you a mic, but I have one up here too. If somebody raises their hand and wants to put input into it, because I'm going to ask different questions, and I need your input on your guys' thoughts. It's almost like an open discussion, and I try to have some points as we go along here. What is all in? What does all in look like to you? If somebody says, I am all in, what does that look like to you? What is, what would be another word? Fully committed, or that kind of thing. We're talking in the Christian life. If you are all in, what does that look like in your guys' eyes? Anybody. Anybody can raise their hand and make a comment of what you think. You guys are pretty open with Josh, and I'm hoping for the same thing here too. Go ahead, Douglas. else? What does all in look like to you, Gideon? Very similar to them verses we read at the beginning. Oh, whoever will lose his life for my sake will find it. You don't really have any care about yourself anymore because your focus is all on Christ. Something else, add to that question, what does all in look like to you? If you would, probably in your mind, or you could very easily, maybe some of you do, a person may come to mind that you think of that, man, I know this person, they are all in. What are some characteristics that go along with being all in? What would be some things that stand out to you, say, in that person's characteristics that would tell you that person is all in? Go ahead, Enos.
For me, I think it's honesty. I can try to hide from God. I can think I surrendered everything, but God knows. And I keep telling myself again and again, it doesn't matter what I'm trying to hide. God knows it's there. Mm-hmm. And when I become completely honest and just tell the Lord, I have peace.
Usually pretty calm, right? If you have a person in mind that you're thinking of, that person is usually pretty calm. Just kind of takes life as it comes because there is an underlying what in that person. There's an underlying rest and a joy that the cares of this world really don't bother them. Go ahead, Ron. Go ahead, Perry.
To the first and second commandments, while we're concerned about commandments, it's easy to say I love the Lord with all my heart, or to say of someone else, they love the Lord with all your heart. That's not enough. There's two or three other things that belong there too. In one place it gives two others, and the other, I'll quote the one that says the three others, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart. Well, yeah, I do that. With all your soul, well, how's that different from my heart? You can maybe write a book on that. I don't know. And with all your mind, there's the one I work on. I'm a very mental, intellectual person. And I like to think about everything. I like to think things through. But I've learned to cut my thoughts off so I can pray without ceasing. If I think, I try to think what the Lord is putting on my heart at the time, not the wonderful things I like to think about. And all your strength. We don't talk much about this. No church talks much about this, but just as the mission field requires money, prayer requires physical strength. Requires calories. You don't have calories to burn, you can't pray like Jesus did in Gethsemane. And there are times to pray like that, especially for souls. And my days of praying under heavy burdens like that are pretty well long gone. I don't have the physical strength to pray that way. I didn't mean to start a sermon here, but Jesus said the children of darkness are wiser in their generation than the children of light. And I've heard this, and I hate to repeat it, but it's true. Someone was quoting someone else. I don't know who started this. This is decades old. But the church, I'm starting the quote, the church has to be of God. Because if any other business besides the church was run the way the church is run, it would go out of business right away. The children of darkness are wiser in their generation than the children of light. I've thought a lot about this verse, and having been in many churches and for all my life, basically, I've seen a lot that really could be changed and should be changed, but I've learned not to talk about most of it because you can't push it. You can pray for it mostly, mention a few things once in a while, but you don't want to pull up the wheat with the tares. Enough on that line. But going back to the church being needing some lessons from the world as far as business sense is concerned. The world sends its young men out to war. 16 to 30, depends on the country. That's the age they send their young men out to war. We send them out to play games and to have fun. And we boast about people over 50 as being our prayer warriors. If they only knew that we who are over 50 wish we had the calories to pray like we did when we were young. We don't have it anymore. Our aim is better, but our energy is less. So that's loving God with all your strength. There's other ways to love him with all your strength. When someone's in need, here's another place where the world is probably a lot wiser than the church. I've been in several first aid courses over my career, and mostly in factory work, physical work of some kind, and you go through first aid courses, and one thing is about CPR. I don't know what it's like today, but a few decades ago when CPR first came out, we were taught when you start CPR, there's only two ways to quit, period. Either you pass out from exhaustion or someone comes to relieve. Would to God that we had that kind of physical dedication when people around us are in need and we feel a little stressed because we have to give something or we have to walk an extra mile for them. What kind of commitment do we have with, in loving him with all of our strength? So just some thoughts about the first commandment.
Let's go to 1 Corinthians 10:31. Says, whether therefore ye eat or drink or whatsoever ye do, do all to the glory of God. And we kind of answered this already. In a person that you're look or that maybe you have in mind that is all in, what are some characteristics that stand out to you in this verse, whether you do all to the glory of God? What is it about that person? If a person is all in, what is it about him that brings that sense of calmness in that person? And Roman shared with that some too. There's an underlying rest. And it is, and a lot of that would come from already you see his full what? His full commitment, his full surrender already. That shines through very quickly when you talk to somebody that is, they're very grounded. They know exactly where they stand with God. They're not shaken by the things that are going on around them. They're fully surrendered, and that shows very quickly. Another scripture, Colossians 3:23, actually 22:23, servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God, and whatsoever ye do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men. There's not much focus on a person. There's not much focus on oneself when you are fully surrendered, almost none. Because it's, why is that? Maybe I'm jumping ahead of myself here a little bit. Yeah. Why would that be? Of, there wouldn't be a whole lot of focus on. Sorry, Karen, did you have something to share back here? You go ahead, go for it. That's what this is. I missed your hand or something back there. Sure. Go, you can share. Go ahead. Say what you were going to say. Absolutely. What would be a few characteristics that could hinder or be roadblocks to being all in? Anybody got anything to put in on that? There's, you're a man. Yep, very true. Something else? I'm sure it'll come out because it always does. What's a roadblock? What's a hindrance to being all in? Just holler it out, Perry. What is it? flesh. Yep. What's another one? What's some more? Roman. Values. Yep. How about pride? Pride gets in the way pretty quick. Bitterness. Exactly. What's something else? Self. Yep. Here's one I actually thought about just since I'm up here. And I think this has... I think this can play into it too, is, okay, so, well, first let's talk about pride. I wrote down a few things here about pride. A self-centered person thinks of himself first. Simple as that, right? If you're self-centered, you think about yourself first. And you can usually pick that up pretty quick in a conversation when someone is pretty full of pride. It's all about them. It's all about the things they've done, they have accomplished. And it gets kind of a one-sided conversation, usually pretty quick, because it's all about that person. All the things they did, all the things they accomplished, they usually talk about themselves, not too much about God a lot of times. It's about their troubles, how people have treated them, poor me. But along with that, so I think that is one that can be a big roadblock. The bitterness can be a very big roadblock too, because your focus gets off of what the goal is, and it'll stick you right in there. This is a, I wasn't even going to share this illustration, but I'm going to keep moving. I'm not even going to go there for right now. Discipline. How many people think discipline... This could be a real controversy here, because there's an element of discipline that is very good in the Christian walk, but discipline can get in the way of you being all in for the Lord. Does that make sense to people? Should I explain it a little bit more? Your discipline, you get so disciplined doing your routine and how you think it should be done, which I would almost categorize as you're setting it up by self. This could fall into the next one that I'm going to talk about here in just a second, that your eyes are not even focused on what God has for you, but you are so ingrained into this is the way it needs to be that the discipline can take away from God even being able to work. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Goes back to the values of what are you basing your values off of? Here's another one. Does anybody know what an inner vow is? Somebody. Holler it out if you know what an inner vow is. Inner vow. Does that resonate with anybody? Do you know what an inner vow is? Mm-hmm. Keep going. Keep talking. That's exactly what it is. Does this ring true to anybody? A phrase like this. Has anybody heard this? My mom and dad used to parent like this, and I will never do that to my kids. Anybody hear that? Or how about this one? I hear this one all the time in my age group. I hear this all the time in my age group right now. I will never make my kids work as hard as I did. Anybody hear that? I grew up in a poor family, and I decided a long time ago, I will never be poor again. I will work hard. I will do whatever it takes to have money. Everybody hear that? You know what them things are? Them are inner vows. You are putting out there, broadcasting out into the universe. Okay, when we say things, whatever you say, negative or positive, gets thrown out there, and something's going to answer that. Would you not agree with that? We got good angels, we've got bad angels. Satan's got angels, the Lord has angels. When we say things out there into the universe, they're going to get answered. Go ahead, Roman. Them things are going to get answered. If you start speaking like this, I will never. You are forming all this around you, all from you. Would it not sound a whole lot better if your heart was all in for the Lord? Maybe you didn't agree with some ways that you, the way your parents treated you or that kind of thing, but you'd say, man, there's a lot of things that I see now that my parents did, and I don't really want to practice myself, so I'm asking the Lord to show me new ways to walk with him, to how I can parent. I can learn from them mistakes, and I can parent in a better way versus setting up everything the way you're going to do it, because I will tell you, with an inner vow, anyway, let's expound on that a little bit. What's wrong with the pictures of these inner vow things that I said there? I will never make my kids work as hard as I did. I hear that one quite a bit. Go ahead, Roman. A reactionary spirit quite often. Go ahead, Gideon.
That way about your past that maybe you're carrying a little bit of bitterness. You could very easily be carrying some bitterness about it, you know, and even other stuff like, we used to be in so-and-so-and-so a church, and I, you know, just carrying on about looking back and focusing on the past instead of looking forward unto Jesus. I think you really need to examine our hearts. Do I carry bitterness towards those people or that past, or why am I always bringing it up?
It goes hand in hand. That bitterness will creep in there so fast. It is a real trick of the enemy. I'll bring that bitterness. Go ahead, Jerry. Just like pride, inner vows are rooted primarily in self. You see, life is all about me. Oh, that's what a person that makes inner vows, or that's all about self. It's all about me. What I have set up and determined to happen, and I will work very hard to make things go the way I want them to be. And we're inner vows. I'll have a caution for that. Be careful. Because you're just about ready for a fall. Because when you build it all up on yourself, right up here on Roman, because if you build it all up with yourself, go ahead, Roman. I was going to share that too, that with the inner vow thing. I have seen this played out firsthand with the guy that I worked with in Minnesota. He worked under me for a number of years. We hired him on as summer help, and he kept on working with us for a while. And he had a dad that was an extreme alcoholic, and he could not stand the stuff his dad was doing. Spent the evenings, the weekends, everything in the bar. He was a fun guy to be around. He worked at our local lumberyard, this guy's dad. He was fun to talk to, had a great sense of humor, but he was an alcoholic bad. And this guy that came and started working for us, did good work and that kind of thing. He was fun to have around. He did not like what his dad was doing. He's like, I do not agree with what dad does. He said, that's just terrible. But then you, here and there, you kept hearing these things. I do not ever want to be like my dad. Well, I moved on. I left that job some years back. You know the road that guy's walking? Exactly the same. And we've seen this over and over. I think every one of you probably have an illustration of somewhere that said, I don't ever want to be like this, and they end up in the same path. And why is that? It's an inner vows. You sit there and proclaim, here's a twisted side. This is the way my mind works. So back years ago after we got married, this is ridiculous. Why do I say this stuff? Oh, years ago after we were married, I really wanted to move out here to Montana. So we got married in 03. And so for a lot of years, I wanted to come out here. We'd come out here and make trips out here and stuff, and my wife was not on board at all. She's like, I don't know anybody out there. Prettiest place I've ever seen, but I don't want to live out there. I'm like, oh, man. So just to be dumb because of inner vows, I said, I will never move to Montana. Is that a good thing to do? It's called the reverse psychology. Here I am. No, I was just doing that for stupid. But oftentimes your inner vow that you start saying, I will never, because it's all based in you, that very thing is probably going to happen. Because it's all set on you. It's not, your focus is not on God and who is in control of everything. But he wants us to make choices for him and to put him first. That's the whole point of this all-in thing. The patterns of these things are exactly what the enemy wants. They want them built up around you. That's what the enemy wants. He wants it full of self. Because it takes God right out of the center of your life and puts you in charge. And that's exactly what the enemy's looking for. Sometimes it's very subtle and you have to be very careful and break them things down. Of what is it? What's driving me to do this? What am I thinking in my mind? You got to get real with yourself and get to the bottom of it. Let's go to Ephesians 2, verses 8 and 10. Ephesians 2, verse 8, for by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It is the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus unto good works, which God hath before ordained that we should walk in them. A workmanship created in Christ Jesus, not of ourselves. I love how that is, because that's really where it is. This life is not about ourselves. It has nothing to do with us. It has everything to do with him and how we walk with him. Here's another one that can be a roadblock. I hear this more in conversations, and I always kind of cringe when I hear it. When someone asks me, I don't hear it as much now, but I hear it in other conversations too. How's your spiritual walk going? What do you have to say about that? If someone asks me how my spiritual walk is going, I'm like, oh, can we separate that? That smart aleck side of me wants to come out and say, oh, can we separate that? I don't believe you can separate it. If you're a person that feels like you can separate your daily walk with your spiritual walk, it can't be done. It's our spiritual walk is 24/7, 365, 24 hours a day. It's everything. And this is what being all in is. It's all of it. There was an illustration. I'm trying to think how it went. Roman, you shared it. A guy that, how did that go? Was it about a song that was written? You shared here, was it on a Sunday evening or something like that? It might have been a Sunday morning. About a guy that, I think he wrote the song, and I forget which song it is that goes with it. But I remember thinking that guy was all in. Because right in front of him, I believe they took his son. And then they took the wife, or was it children first, and then they took his wife also? I was like, that's all right. Is that the song, No Turning Back? Yeah. That guy was all in. When I'm talking about all in, that's what I'm talking about. There's nothing going to deter me from keeping my focus on Christ. You can take everything around me, but I'm all in for the Lord because this life is about him. I love that illustration. That just came to mind here as we were talking. Yeah, when Christ is at the center of your life, there is no separating it. It's 24/7, a walk with God, everything. What does it change on our day-to-day basis if you are all in? What would be things that would change to what would normally be? That's kind of a hard one to answer. But there's things you're going to do differently when you are all in than it is if you just have them set up in the way you think they should be. Oh, I see. I need to bring this to a close here quickly. Takes the focus off of oneself, and you start looking outside to where can I give, because God has blessed us so richly, where can I give, versus looking at what I can get. I think right off the bat on being all in, it takes a commitment, and I'm going to read something here. This would be similar to, and this could be changed by any person here if you ever want to say this commitment to God, but this would be just the way I wrote it down in my own words of what I feel it, the first commitment of being all in is. And I think it's a following pursuit of God after this, but it would be something like, God, here I am, created in your image, but I keep doing the things the way I want them to be. So God, today I confess these things to you and want to make a change, that everything about me I want for you. My thoughts, my talk, my actions, my wants, my entire being, I want for you, Lord. Wash me clean from head to toe. I think that falls right into that category of what Annie was talking about. Being honest, you got to be honest and get to the bottom of every single thing. Don't hide anything, because God sees it all anyway. What are we trying to hide from anyhow? Everything from head to toe. Anything you want from me, I am willing to give to you, God. I am yours, Lord. Use me for whatever you want. Whatever you want to do with me, I'm here for you. That is the first commitment to being all in. In Exodus and Deuteronomy, there's several verses there, different places that talk about God being a jealous God. And, sorry, my mouth is dry. And he wants all our praise, all our worship. He wants all that, but he wants it to come from a pure heart set just for him. Not only does God want our praise and our worship in everything of us, but he wants all the bad too. Give him everything that we're holding back, that we think we're hiding, or anything like that. It's that honesty again. Get it all out there. God wants all of it. When it says he's a jealous God, he wants absolutely everything of you. And then he can take it, shape it, mold it. He can use them bad things and turn them to good things. It is unbelievable how God can do it. He has a master plan from where you come from, and he wants a full surrendered heart. And he can take what you think looks so dark and ugly, and all of a sudden, it's changing. You're like, well, I had no idea. Now all of a sudden, I'm using this to be able to do this? This is crazy. Only God can do that. And he wants all of it. He wants all that dirty, the junk. Get it all out there. He wants every single bit of it. He's jealous because he wants all of it. I believe that is also included in the verses in Exodus and Deuteronomy about being a jealous God. He wants everything. He wants our praise, our honor, but everything else too. John 8:12. Then spake Jesus again unto them, saying, I am the light of the world. He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. I love that last phrase. You walk with me, you give me everything, you will have the light of life to follow after. He will guide you and teach you, show you, bring things to mind. Go ahead, Roman. Bring this to a close here. And the reason I say all this, and it kind of hit me to talk about this today, and I was like, how is that for us right now? And I want it to be on an everyday level for myself. It took me a long time. I have a passion for youth, and here it comes. It always does. I love our youth. I love the life, the energy. Till I came to this point and said, God, it's all you. I was well into my 30s until I finally got to that point. Youth, don't wait that long. God has so much more for you. I look back and I kick myself. Oh, man, that was so stupid. But I don't want to stay there, because God can keep using you. But make that choice way sooner don't wait that long. That was so dumb on my part. But I love the way God is a restorer. And, he can, what is lost, he can bring back. It's unbelievable how he does it. But make that commitment early in life that, God, it's all yours. Whatever you want to do with me, use me. So anyway, we're ending an end of a year today. And going into 24, I'm not a big one for New Year's resolutions and stuff like that. Even if the scale is tipping farther than what you'd want it to, it's all right. Oh, I'm just not a big one on New Year's resolutions because I see them fall apart so quickly. But this is not a New Year resolution. This is a day-to-day, a week, month, year. It goes on for a lifetime. God, it's all you. And you have to remind ourselves quite often of that. Man, I had to remind myself so often of that because right away the self wants to well up. Something that comes in. You're like, no, God, it's all about you. What do you want me to do? I know this is what I want, but it's all about you. What do you want me to do? It's a day-to-day, month-to-month, week-to-week. Sometimes it's moment-to-moment in the hard times. God, you got to use me. Whatever you want to do, I wanted to do it the way you want me to do it. And so anyway, as we go into a new year, are we all full surrender to him? All in. Are you all in? That's a challenge for today, and that's where I will leave it at this point. I'm not sure who's closing the service. Dennis, are you closing?